and welcome to the latest episode of the Online Warriors podcast. First of all, I'm back. Tectic, Nerd Bomber, thank you for covering for me last week. I'm just going to be straight up honest. I got called into a work meeting. So if you're a coworker,
yeah, we made fun of you.
And I hope you did. If you're a coworker and you're listening to this right now, I want you to know this is your fault. There's only really like two people I know at work who know about this. Anyways, we are back to a strength of three, but actually we are at a strength of four because we have the fantastic Mr. Stephen Keller with us today, our Patreon producer. Stephen, how you doing?
I'm back. I'm doing good. I bet you I might have one or two coworkers that listen to this, so we'll see what they say.
Is it their fault?
Yeah, I think it's their fault that I'm here. Yeah, I think so.
Okay, good to know. Yeah, I mean, it's good to be here. It's good to be in the month of May. This is my first May record, thanks to everything that happened. Is this our first May record in general? I guess it would be, right? First May record, second May episode,
I believe. Yes, I believe so.
May, first of all, May's a great month. Let me just say that right out of the gate. There's a stretch, speaking of work, there's a stretch there from, at least for me, from the end of, like, from New Year's until, like, Memorial Day that like there's no holiday days off from work, which like maybe that's a hot take. I don't know. Do you guys get like President's Day off or something? We get no days off. It's just a vast expanse of 5 months for us.
Really?
Yeah, not till Memorial Day.
Yeah. So
that's correct. Yeah.
Memorial Day approaching to me signifies like, all right, we're entering summer mode. Things are, you know, Things are getting a little more chill. People are taking a lot of time off in the summer, and like I think May just, and the weather's getting nicer in May. Someone's birthday is also in May. Just throwing that out there. It's mine. Also, it may be yours, listener. I have no idea, but that's a big day in May. So lots to look forward to. Very happy to have Steven here with us today. We're going to be talking a little bit about Funko Fusion. We're going to be talking about Dave and Buster's, or as Nerd Bomber calls it, Dave and Hustlers. Is that what you called it?
I did call it that. Unintentionally, like that was like an autocorrect situation, but then I decided to like own it and lean into it because I love it.
I'm pretty sure that's like a male strip club.
Dave and Hustlers. So I was about to ask, like, do you want to give anyone credit for that? But it sounds like you came up with it because I think it's very funny. I think there's a news organization listening right now that's like, we got to steal that.
Oh, 100%. And they're not even going to give me credit.
So don't steal it. That's legally binding. You can't steal it. We're going to be talking about Helldivers too because they've been in the news a lot in the past week. For not good reasons, just I feel like the latest like big video game thing to be like, hey, things are going great. What if we really put our foot in it? So we'll get to that. But I want to lead off with Funko Fusion because, as we all know, I'm a huge fan of the 1999 Mummy movie, and anything that's even tangentially related to that, I'm a fan of. So Funko Fusion, for those that do not know, this is a game that was announced last week. We got a trailer. It's coming September 13th, 2024, and it's probably what you're thinking it is, in the sense that it is the Funko Pop video game, as far as I know, the first one, and kind of a no-brainer. I mean, this watching the trailer, and we'll get everyone's thoughts here, but my initial overarching reaction was, I can't believe this hasn't happened yet. It feels like a no-brainer. It feels like it's poised to succeed. Thinking about how successful all the Lego game franchises have been, feels like if they even lean into this a little bit with some effort, it's going to go over well. But I guess to kind of wet everyone's whistles here, what is our Funko Pop ownership level going around the room? And we'll start with you, Steven, because you were the person who put this topic in the mix, so I imagine you may have some significant Funko investment, or am I wrong about that?
I kind of want to plead the fifth on this. I have too many, I guess I should say.
You have some amount.
Listen, yeah, no judgment.
So I'm looking at the Funko app right now, and it says my collection is 139 items.
Yeah, I mean, if you have the Funko app, I feel like that alone implies to me that you're knee deep, shoulder deep in the Funko Pop ecosystem. Which, you know, I believe I own two Funko Pops, so I'm in the game. I have the Winter Soldier, and I have Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah, but see, you didn't buy at least one of those. One of those was a gift.
That's correct. It was a gift. It was from you guys, correct? I assume that's how you know that. It's Jeff Goldblum from Jurassic Park looking hot as all heck. Like
the sexy one?
Lounging. Yeah, the sexy one.
Of course it's sexy.
With his name spelled wrong?
It's incredible. Just that. I mean, Jeff Goldblum is incredible. The Funko is incredible. I know there's a bunch of, going back to the Mummy for a second, I know there's a Rick O'Connell Funko that I don't have it. I probably should have it, but I don't have it. Getting back to this game, I have some questions about the logistics of it, because obviously Funko Pop, there are, as Steven's collection of 100, we'd say 139, there's basically any media franchise you can think of, there is at least one Funko Pop associated with it. Like, I don't really understand the Funko business model in the sense of, like, how do they get licensing for all of these things? I imagine that's a lot of money, but they do very well for themselves. So I have questions in the same vein about, you know, how do you limit in the game? I mean, they've mentioned a few franchises that are going to be involved in this game, but the possibilities are theoretically endless, right? So I wonder aloud how they made the choices they made of what franchises to include. But again, I guess continuing to spin around the room, Tectic, Nerd Bomber, your Funko Pop level of investment is what exactly?
We have two entire display cabinets filled with them.
I wouldn't say it's all Funko, but we do have quite a few of them, for sure.
Yeah, it's a smattering of nerdy collectibles, with Funko's leading the charge on quantity.
If you had to ask me what my favorites are, I mean, I have a decent amount, but Tectic actually got me both of these. They're both semi-Lion King related. So the first one is Sora from Kingdom Hearts, but like his lion version in the game. And then the other one, they made like these bigger like VHS backer Funkos. And so he got me a Simba Pride Rock, you know, Lion King VHS one.
Her first love.
Again, very successful. Like, they're very visually distinctive. So again, my first thought was, how has this not happened yet? It seems like a no-brainer. I mean, what were your guys, Steven, what were your thoughts on what we saw in the trailer? Is this something that you're definitely going to be looking to pick up? Is it something that you're at the very least curious about, or are you concerned?
It'll be a game I think I'll pick up with, depending on the reviews and gameplay, because I don't think there was really any gameplay too much in this trailer. I think it was more just of, here's all the Universal characters that we have, just kind of show them off. But it's from the people who did the Lego games. They broke off from Traveler's Tales, or whatever their name was. Yeah, Traveler's Tales. And they started a new studio called 1010 Games. So the fact that it's going to be kind of like maybe the Lego games seems promising, because I really liked those games. So I don't know if you'll be able to switch between characters like you can in Lego on the whim, or if you're assigned a character depending on the world. It's be kind of interesting.
Exactly.
To see how that breaks up.
But there's so much blood.
It was pretty bloody compared to most.
That is another thing, especially at the very end. I was like, man, is this game for kids or is it not? Like, it's, and I think the answer is it's both. But like, I do have the same questions you have, Steven, of like, how do they manage? Because presumably all the characters they have involved, which is going to be many, they're all going to have different abilities and things that they do, different combat moves, whatever. How do they, as the game makers, manage which character you are at any given time? Like, is it going to be linear, where you play as Rick O'Connell for a little bit, and then you're playing as, you know, why can't I think of a single other character? The Winter Soldier. I just use one of the Funkos I have. Like, is it going to be linear like that, or are you going to be able to hot swap characters based on your playstyle? We didn't get a whole lot of detail, and we didn't get a whole lot of gameplay, like you said, in the trailer. I think there may be one or two shots. So but that's a question that I'm assuming they're going to answer.
In the Lego games, you can play through them. You play through them as a story where they pick your characters, but then if you wanted to go back and replay levels, the Lego games gave you the option to replay them as a different character. So my guess is that's how they would do that, where you play as, when you're doing your first playthrough and it has all the cutscenes, you play as the linear self-picked character. And then when you go back, the cutscenes have already been played. They're not going to replay. But now you're this other character to just kind of go back and collect things you might have missed.
But you also, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, I have very limited experience in the Lego games. I played them a very little bit. I seem to remember that at certain times I think I played one of the Avengers ones, and you would need to like hot swap characters in level in order to.
But those hot swapped characters were
get past certain obstacles.
Part of those cutscenes. Like, those were in that linear story still.
Right. Okay, I think I see your point.
But like, you, as you play, you unlock like a whole catalog of characters. And that's where I'm saying you can go back. Likely you will be able to go back and play as anyone and anything, but it's after you've already completed that cutscene. That's how they've done it in the past with the Lego games. And that kind of makes more sense with not having to manage all of these cutscenes to have unique character loadouts and all that other stuff for them.
Now, do we have any thoughts on who the villain is? I believe, don't correct me if I'm wrong, The voice sounded like Chris Parnell. That would be very weird if it was Chris Parnell, but it sounded like Chris Parnell. If you have a bunch of franchises in the mix, is the main villain in the game going to be a villain from one of those franchises, or is it going to be an original character or tactic? It sounds like you have a strong thought about this.
Yes, it has to be an original character, and it's going to be something like Funko's version of the Collector. That is my opinion. That makes the most sense. It helps them build a story that they can pop in and out of any kind of spin-off games with this, where there's just their own villains, and then that also allows them to introduce new merchandise where they don't have to worry about royalties or anything like that. It's their unique IP character. That makes the most sense.
Yes, and that's, I think, the true beauty of this idea. And you know, knowing too, Steve and I did not know that this was an offshoot of the studio that's done the Lego games. Like, that makes a whole lot of sense, makes me feel a lot more confident about this whole venture. But the other thing that I think is interesting about Funko Fusion, which the website very heavily implies at the very least, is that, you know, there's going to be, obviously, you're going to play the game and you're going to see Funko Pops that you can buy, right? But I think the game is also planning on, and Tactic, you kind of were just getting to this, like, with certain characters they're going to introduce that are maybe original to the game, the game is going to feed the merchandise and the merchandise is going to feed the game. So, like, it feels like there's a lot of money making potential, which, as we know, is what makes the world go round, at least in terms of video games. So this feels like a win.
As part of their trailer, they've already shown that they're going to have collectibles specific tied to the game collectibles that, I mean, one of them that comes to mind was the Jurassic Park one. That was already done, but it's kind of tied to it. So it makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that the Lego video game franchise really has that, where I don't know that you're going to play the game and want to go out and buy a Lego set. You know, I think
the other side of it is who's got Lego money. You know what I mean? Like, I've got Funko money. I don't have Lego money.
What is the going rate for a Funko Pop? Like $20?
It's like 10. I have no idea. $10.
It's 10 to 15.
Yeah.
On the generic, usually around 15. I think if you go to Funko's website, it's about 15, but you can get them for 8.
Lego is oftentimes prohibitively expensive. So I hear you on that. I think this is a great idea. I don't have a whole lot more to say about it other than that. Steven, Nerdbomber, any further thoughts on Funko Fusion? What your level of excitement is?
I will say I'm glad that they picked Universal to be the franchises they're going to stick through for the first one, just because I like most Universal movies, like the Jurassic Park, the Jaws, the Back to the Future, the Mummy. I like that they're sticking to Universal first.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, there's a lot of MCU Funko Pops, but that market is pretty saturated, right? So it does feel like a fairly smart decision. Scott Pilgrim versus the World, that's another one that's in here that I think is pretty interesting. Hot Fuzz, Shaun of the Dead. Again, really any franchise you could think of, and I guess in this case, any franchise you could think of that's a Universal-owned franchise, it's going to be in here in some way. So we'll see what this looks like. I'm sure we're going to get a lot more footage of this, hopefully some gameplay footage. It does come out September 13th, 2024. So be on the lookout for that. You can currently wishlist it on Steam. Let's stick with video games. And let's talk about Helldivers 2 here. Let me start by saying I have not played Helldivers 2. I don't have a horse in this race. The news here. Let me just run through the news and then we can jump to opinions, which I think we're probably going to be pretty unified on, but we'll get to that. Helldivers 2 has been a huge success on both PS5 and on PC, in particular on Steam. I know a bunch of friends who play it. It's been the toast of the town for a couple months now, I think. Sony recently announced that PC players would need to link their PlayStation Network accounts to their Steam accounts in order to keep playing the game. Their reasoning for this that they have said, as far as I know, is that they want to avoid, it's a security thing, they want to avoid that people are, like, I guess, misrepresenting themselves within the game. There's obviously a huge number of problems with this. A lot of PC gamers don't have PSN accounts. A lot of people have noted that the fact that they're saying it's for security reasons is ironic because PSN has been hacked, I think, a few times. I think PlayStation Network is not available in certain countries where the PC version of the game is available. So the upshot of all this, or I guess the downshot if you're Sony, is that a lot of people have requested refunds. A lot of people have changed their reviews on Steam to be negative, which most people to this point, I think, have really loved the game. To my knowledge, I don't think Sony has backed down on this at all, which it feels like a very no-brainer thing to back down on unless they have a very good reason, which I don't know what the reason may be. But right now, a lot of people are asking for refunds. I think a lot of people are being given refunds. Can someone explain this to me? I don't really get it. Even the developer of the game too, Arrowhead Games, basically, they're actually suggesting that their players change their Steam reviews to negative in protest. So they're like, they're also turning on Sony, which I think is a bold move by the developer. But in any case, why would you do this? I just don't get it.
So they were supposed to do it at launch. It was supposed to be a launch issue, but they were having server-side problems, which Helldivers had a bunch of server stuff at the beginning. So they did delay this. The big thing, I think, is that you can't create a PSN network in some of the countries. And they've said, they announced today that they're doubling down on that. They're going to pull sales from that. You can't play the game in those countries because you could create an account for another country, but if you don't live in that country, you're violating the terms of service of PlayStation. But PlayStation's like, yeah, you just can't play or play the game then if you live in those countries, which seems to be, to me, the negative of the whole thing.
Right. As far as I know, again, correct me if I'm wrong, if anyone knows, like, their whole reason for this is security? They just want to make sure people aren't hacking the game?
They want your data. They want your info. That's really what they want.
It's not even really security. They even said that it was, like, to prevent griefing of people just kind of trolling other people. But, like, that can be handled on Steam as well. You don't need a PSN account.
Well, you can handle that with, like, IP address banning. And granted, it's a little bit easier on PC to, like, spoof your IP address. So I get wanting to link it to a PSN account. But like Steven said, I think there are so many negatives that come with this just in terms of, like, regional playability that you almost wonder, like, almost the easier solution would be to, like, segment your PC players a little bit. I don't know. I don't know how that would work either, though.
Well, yeah. And, you know, you mentioned, like, IP banning as, like, potentially a way to fix this. Like, this isn't a new problem. Like, I think there are probably other ways to solve the problem that they are trying to solve by making people have a PSN account. And, like, the other thing too here, like, yeah, like you said, Steven, like, the people who are in countries that can't play it, that's the biggest issue here. But, like, I think Sony is also, like, underestimating how fickle gamers can be and also, like, how many other options they have. Like, it does not take much more than a minor annoyance because the market is so saturated with other games they could be playing at any given time. It's like, why would you raise their barrier to entry at all? Why would you make them, even people who can go make a PSN account? Like, I can imagine many, many gamers seeing that, you know, requirement suddenly become live and then being like, all right, I'm just going to move on now. And some people are like, all right, I'm not just going to move on. I'm going to go give this game a negative review because they're making me do this. Like, it's just a strange thing for them to do. And like you said, Steven, the fact that they're doubling down is particularly strange. Like, just like taking the game away from those countries entirely is, I don't really get it. Maybe there's something to get here. Maybe this is just a bad decision.
I think they see it as if they take a stance long and hard enough that they'll eventually get people to just cave. Like, I think they're playing chicken, honestly, and Helldivers be damned. And to your point, right? There is a lot of other games that people can play. So Sony is probably banking on that.
They're banking on people going and playing other Sony games?
Other games, because guess what? Sony, and it's either Sony or PC, right? There's PlayStation or PC that they're choosing from in this situation. They're saying, well, one game be damned. They're going to have to figure it out either way.
I think what they probably didn't bank on, so the Steam refund policy is typically, I think it's 2 hours is the threshold. If you've played a game for more than two hours, you typically can't get a refund. And I think they did not anticipate Steam walking that back because of this change. And Steam 100% did, which, as they should, good for them. That's a very consumer forward move. You know, the terms of service of a game that you paid for change, you should be able to, you know, get your money back, at least to some degree. I don't care how much you've played it. If suddenly the developer is making an update where you can't play the game without a certain barrier to entry, like, yeah, that should be told to you up front. And I think they didn't bank on Steam allowing those refunds, because in their mind, it was probably like, well, we're rolling out this change late, but we've already got their money. And that's not the case.
Well, yeah, not anymore. Yeah, I mean, you know, the article I have in front of me about this, which for the record is from Forbes, like, it also makes the point that, like, Sony has recently, like, they ported The Last of Us to PC, they ported Horizon Zero Dawn to PC fairly recently. Like, they had a lot of goodwill with PC gamers, and now they're just, like, squandering it for what feels like a really dumb reason. So again, I don't know that there's much sense to make from this.
That's the other thing that I don't know if they realize too, like, the internet is very fickle, and something like this, it's not just going to be this game now. like they will have built up enough bad will that it's going to carry forward. And PC players will now second guess any Sony purchase. I'm sure I can almost assure you that there's a gaggle of Redditors or people on Twitter, I still refuse to call it X, who every time there's a Sony release, like they're going to bombard it with bad reviews because of this situation. And
yeah,
you got to think about the optics when you're making decisions like this.
You are right, though. Focusing on the positives, like Steam, and you know, maybe one of you will credit or correct me at this point, but like I don't think I've ever heard a single bad thing about Steam as a company and like the way they treat gamers. I think one of the reasons that it has, I feel like it's the de facto PC gaming platform, is because they just treat gamers so well. And I don't know that they often, if ever, do any sort of BS stuff like this. And if anything, they're the other party that's like, well, no, you can refund this game because, yeah, like you said, they just changed the terms of service and we're not going to abide by that. So, yeah, we'll allow you to get a refund. Like, that feels like a classic Steam move. I think I read somewhat recently that, like, the CEO of Steam, like, his whole thing is just, like, he doesn't take a big salary. His whole thing is just, like, I want to be the place where gamers play games, and like I want to be nice to gamers, and like they also have great sales. Like it just, it seems like a really great place to be. Again, I am not a PC gamer, so I don't have much experience. There might be people yelling at me on Twitter right now or wherever being like, no, Steam is bad and here's why, but like I don't hear many horror stories about Steam ever. And Sony, you know, like again, Sony I feel like was riding a high, and now like this feels like a very EA move, which I know EA is not the same thing as Sony in terms of like Sony is the company that makes the PlayStation and EA is just a big studio, but like this feels like the kind of move that EA would make. And I don't know why Sony is doing this. We'll see in the coming days if they walk this back at all, but as of this recording, which is on May the 5th, they haven't. So sorry, Helldivers 2 players. Are any of you guys here Helldivers 2 players? I've heard it's amazing, but I haven't played it at all.
I've heard it's really good. My biggest problem, and I think Tectic mentioned griefing earlier, or I'm just thinking about a conversation we had prior to the podcast. Okay. But I would struggle with that. And it's the same reason why, even though I really love Fallout, I mean, I haven't picked up Fallout 76 since basically it launched because I was tired of people griefing me online. Like, I don't like putting a bunch of work in and then having someone come and like wreck my shit. Or just troll me, and I don't love that. So I don't do a lot of multiplayer anymore these days.
The term has been used enough where I now have to ask what that means. And hopefully I'm benefiting the listeners who are listening who don't know what griefing is.
You're just bringing misery upon people who are just trying to enjoy the game.
Yeah, you're basically deliberately acting against, this is from Google, because I figure Google definition is warranted here. When gamers in multiplayer games deliberately act against the server rules or community guidelines to prevent the progress of other players.
Why would anyone do that?
Have you met the internet?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's a good counterpoint. It's like a cooperative experience, this game.
You're basically working as a team of like four to complete missions on a planet to fight robots and insects, kind of Starship Troopers-esque.
Starship Troopers, yeah. So you're telling me that in that four-player co-op game, they're regularly getting, or they fear that they'll regularly get players walking on with another team of three people and just try to sabotage them?
Yeah, and friendly fires on so you can kill your teammates.
Yeah, have you ever gotten into, like, especially old school? I feel like in old school Halo and Call of Duty, friendly fire was very much a thing. I think they've
cut that down.
No, it's still a thing now because we're playing Halo Infinite and, like, you can still kill your fellow teammates. But, like, did you ever just get into a lobby and there was just somebody in there who would team kill you the entire game just for shits and giggles, and it would be the most frustrating thing in the world?
Honestly, no, I've never had that experience. I mean, I haven't done a whole lot of online multiplayer. like the last time I did online multiplayer in a like concerted way was, I think it might have been Destiny. And like Destiny, I feel like was an environment where that sort of shit just was not tolerated. Like Destiny was like a bunch of folks. I think when I got to it, I got to it well after release. But even like the friendly fire aspect aside, it was like everyone who was there in earnest. And again, that was probably because I was coming to Destiny like 3 years late. So the people that were left there at that point were the people that were like grinding and taking it seriously. And like, I imagine, yeah, like in Call of Duty or other like similar games, I guess this game too, like there might be people who are just like, I'm just going to goof around and like ruin the experience for others for an evening. And That sucks. I do kind of think though, like Steven, I think you said it best, like, yes, the PSN account, I guess, would help to combat that. But there are other ways to do that. And B, they probably just want your data, which, like, man, that sucks. Everyone wants the big D. And like, this is an offshoot conversation, but like, I kind of feel like, and everybody probably feels this way, like, you hear about how valuable your data is all the time. I'm like, why is that? My data can't be that valuable. I'm not a very interesting person. So like, what is my data going to provide for you that's going to benefit? I know it's because it's like all an aggregated thing, yeah, but like
marketing companies that like sell products and things like that are convinced otherwise, right?
I question how much value
PlayStation can give two shits about your data, but the people they sell it to really do care.
I guess, yeah, that's just so far over my head, I guess, because like I can't imagine PlayStation selling my, you know, PSN data to a company that like makes laundry detergent, and they're gonna like look at it and be like, wow, like, and that's a stupid example, but like companies that are not gaming companies, I think, is the implication. Like, those are the companies that are gonna buy your data because they want to just like know general trends about how you live your life, and I can't connect the dots there. I never have been able to, and I guess I never will be able to. Anyways, Sony, you suck, and I don't say that lightly because I'm a PlayStation 5 boy. But this feels like a bad move, and I don't know why you're just doubling down on it. There's probably still time to undouble down, but the time is running out at this point. I think this has been going on for like a week now, so you're running out of time. We'll take a short break now and come back to talk about Dave and Hustlers, as Nerdbomber calls it. I'm going to try and use that terminology as much as I possibly can. But before we do that, Steven, thanks for everything you do for the show. You are here with us again, and we are very, very grateful for that and happy to have you here. As a result of your Patreon producership on the show, Steven's been supporting us for a long time at the Knight level, which is the highest of our three levels of support. As a result, he gets this occasional guest spot on the show. He gets, of course, access to the monthly secret segment and vlog. He gets input into the weekly game segment, which he is participating in this week. So I don't know, maybe you have the inside track on that. We'll see later. There's also Squire levels of support on Patreon, which gets you access to the monthly secret segment and vlog, and a page level, which gets you access to the monthly secret segment. So you can head over to patreon.com/onlinewarriorspodcast, get the details there, consider saying hi to us, saying hi to Steven, and giving back to this show, keeping the mics on and the tape recorder running. It's not a tape recorder. It's a figure of speech. If we were using tape recorders, this would be a lot harder than it already is. But yeah, thanks again, Steven. And we'll be right back to talk about Dave and Hustlers.
Online Warrior podcast listeners, I want to take a few seconds of your time just to promote Xbox Taverns podcast. It's an Xbox-centric podcast with news, reviews, as well as the five of us talking about all things Xbox. We're from the UK, would love to get in your ears. Search Xbox Tavern on your best podcast app, and you can also head over to xboxtavern.com, where we've got our latest reviews as well as some opinion pieces. Go check it out. Now back to the show.
All right, we are back to talk about Dave and Hustlers. Now, first of all, so before we could even get into the news, I just want to say that I went to a Dave and Buster semi-recently, and by semi-recently I mean in the last year, and it's really great. Before any of us try to crap on Dave and Buster's, because I'm worried that that's going to happen.
I would never. First of all,
it's really fun.
We had, I don't know if this is public knowledge, I don't know if we've ever talked about this, honestly, but we had a phase when we were in grad school. They used to have, and I think they got rid of this deal, but it was like the eat and play combo.
Oh,
they're like
eat and play?
That.
Yeah.
And I think you could get, I think last time we were there or I looked at it, they had gotten rid of it,
well,
but maybe
no,
they brought it back.
There was facets to it. There was facets.
Well, it was tiers of eat and play.
Yeah,
but there was eat and play was one was a certain day that they would promote the special, and then the following day
Wednesdays.
Was half price games.
So what we would do is we would go and get dinner, and we would get the money, you know, that for gameplay.
Oh, and then
we
would
go
out.
Home.
Oh, you tricky!
And then we'd come back
people.
The next day, and then we'd play. Like I think we'd have our leftovers, so we'd eat 2 days. Because, I mean, it's a pretty big dinner. So we'd have our leftovers, and then we'd go back to Dave and Buster's, and we'd play for half price. And we have the Dave and Buster's electric guitar. We have multiple Dave and Buster's hoodies, winner t-shirts. We had been saving.
So you were
prior to
you were gaming the system.
Oh, yeah.
We figured out what games had the best loadouts and how to cheat at the games.
Not cheat. They
how
were...
to not cheat at the games.
No, we Wink. Never cheated. We increased our
just
skill.
Just how to...
Yeah, the
technique and maximize your profit.
Exactly.
Basically.
And also, like, you'd watch other people play it to know the optimal time to play it based on the odds of you getting the high payout.
So I think now, because we haven't been back to Dave & Buster's in a hot minute, basically, like, after COVID, I think we've only been there a couple times. But we had been saving up tickets, and we were in the process. Like, we really wanted to get a blender. Now we have a blender, but I think we have, like, 200,000 tickets, and I don't even know what you can do with that now.
We should do something with that simply because I did the... There was a... Where I grew up, there was a place called Sports Plus, and I saved up my tickets like the best of us, and then it went out of business.
And then it just closed. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Dave & Buster's, I mean, this is kind of a good segue hearing about you guys gaming the system. They're potentially revolutionizing their business. And I don't know this is going to lead to them going out of business. If anything, I think it's going to lead to their business burgeoning. But the story here is that they are going to begin offering their loyalty members the ability to bet on games. So adults 18 or older will be able to place real money wagers on arcade games with friends. Technology expected to be available in the coming months. And yeah, so you can make a friendly $5 wager on a Hot Shots basketball game, a bet on a skee ball competition, or on another arcade game. Now, I've seen some of the funniest tweets I've ever seen about this. Like, just going to Dave & Buster's and, like, betting on a three-year-old playing skee ball and, like, betting your life savings.
They said that it would be only people 18+, because they're doing it through the app.
To be making
Well, yeah, but the three-year-old's playing.
Yeah,
they're
yeah,
betting
be
on a three-year-old.
Yeah.
Like, horses don't
there's
make bets.
There's no thing.
That's your pony.
There's nothing filtering out. Like, a parent could be like, okay, let's do child round off, bet off. I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah, I don't understand. Like, what are you wagering, I guess? It's like, are you, like, making, for example, a $5 wager on a Hot Shots basketball game. Is the idea... I want to understand the use case, because I do think it's a good idea, especially considering how obsessed America is with betting. Like, I've seen the whole, like, FanDuel sportsbook thing, like, explode in the past 5 years. There's no way this isn't going to be a success. I just want to understand it better.
The way in which that I understand it is that it's betting amongst groups. And so if you have, like, you'll have, let's say you have a room and five people get in the room, each person puts $5 in, and then the payout goes to the winner, right? So this isn't a... you're betting against the house situation. So Dave & Buster's isn't paying out. But what they're really doing is now they're skimming a little bit off the top of this opportunity that happens already. Because how many times have you sat around the skee ball, for example, and been like, I've got $5 that I win this? Because I've done that. And now...
No, never times for
I've
me.
Never done
I've
that.
Never done that.
I'll be like... Maybe
I don't have
I'll,
a problem.
Maybe I'll be like, I'll bet a drink. Like, I'll buy you a drink if you beat me at
right,
this. But that, like, I'm not trying to bet cold hard cash.
Right, but now the difference is... So people do that, and or drinks or whatever. And now the only difference is Dave & Buster's just skimming off the top. This is
I
genius.
Guess, is it though? Because my question really is...
Why
like,
wouldn't people just make cash bets then and
right,
not use the app?
Venmo. Like, why would I
right.
go through
you're absolutely
Dave
right.
& Buster's?
You're absolutely right.
The only thing I can think is that they're going to hold, like, contests or something like that, like games of skill, where now it kind of takes out the middleman. Like, you don't need some stranger's personal Venmo information to make a bet. You're literally going there for, like, say, a Hot Shots competition, and you don't know anybody else who's there, and now you can make your wager through Dave & Buster's. Maybe, like, that's their angle?
Yeah, I think you can be able to join a room, basically. So, like, this is a weird example, but, like, Pokemon raids. You don't need to know the people you're raiding, but you're all in there together. That's your group that you're raiding with, so you can just join the group, put in the money, and then exit out. That's where the incentive is. But, yeah, I mean, if you're just a loudmouth enough, you can actually just go up to a three-year-old... parents slap money on the table, say, I got fives on it, and see what happens.
So, Steven, what's your Dave & Buster's experience? Are you a Dave & Buster's fan? Are you not really going there ever? A mix of the two.
I've been to Dave & Buster's once. We don't have any near me.
That's
apparently
a tragedy.
Rumors. There's talk that they're building one somewhere near here, but yeah, we don't have one. I don't understand the point of it. I don't know what Dave & Buster's... Like, what their angle is? Like, how are they getting the skim off the top? Like,
yeah, I have questions about that, too. Like,
I still don't understand, like, yeah, why wouldn't you just, hey, I'll bet you $5 for this, and you just do the cash. I don't know why I need the app, especially if Dave & Buster's is going to get money. I would still rather just do the It's a side hustle.
That's kind of where I'm at too. Knowing that they're going to take a little bit of my profit, I would just be like, you know what? If I'm going, because most of the time I'm not betting with strangers. Like, this is not how I
think
my
there's
life.
Something, but I think there's something to be said for the subconscious element of like, yeah, maybe you're not likely to, first of all, maybe you're not likely to have $5 cash on you. And like Nurbauer mentioned Venmo, but like, I don't know. I think there's a subconscious element of like, you're less likely to like tell your friend like, hey, I'll Venmo you $5 if you do get a better score than me. As opposed to like, if you're on the Dave & Buster's app, reloading your card and you see a bunch of buttons and all a bunch kinds of places, like being like, bet $5 on this. Like, I think there's a suggestive quality to it that they may be able to achieve. I will say, I think it would stand to be better for them if they could figure out a way of like being the house at a casino. Like, I think that is probably where you would make more money than like micro skimming off the top of these bets. But I don't know, like you've said, for many reasons, like, I don't know how even possible that is. But like, I don't know if it's more so like, I'm going to bet $5 that my buddy Brett can like get higher than 36 in the Hot Shots basketball game. And then you're all like gassing up Brett and being like, all right, Brett, be good at this because I have a mortgage to pay. Like, that doesn't really make much sense, but they probably stand to make a lot more money in that way than in the way of like just two people making a bet on who's going to get a better score.
Yeah, I have a very serious question to ask all of you, though.
Go on.
Say you have to place a $100 bet on yourself. What game are you playing?
In an arcade?
In Dave & Buster's arcade, whatever, I guess, if you're not super familiar with the Dave & Buster's games.
And it's just me alone. Definitely not basketball. Like, no one can help me?
Yeah, no one can help you. It's just you.
Definitely not basketball.
And what is deemed a win?
You beat the other people, I guess? I don't know.
All right, then it'd be that cube stack game.
Oh, that's a good answer.
You are actually really stupidly good at that.
It would be that stupid deal or no deal game.
That's,
you know, the dealer,
that's
100%
no dealer chance.
How, yeah, that's all
that?
Chance and luck.
No, it's not. It's not. Because if you get to a certain point, the game will almost always offer you a good deal. Like, there's a mathematical... I think the reason Deal or No Deal was so successful for so long, for all I know, it's even still on TV. Like, there's a gamification of that that's like, it's not just pure chance. Like, yes, you might pick the $1 million thing and like, you're screwed then, but like, you're not screwed because you can still make like, take a deal at some point for like $300,000 and then you turn to your buddy and be like, all right, do better than that. Like, I think Deal or No Deal is like a mind game.
Well, that's why I picked the cube game, because everyone always tries to go for the top, but there's an option to cash out in the midpoint, and I always cash out in the
yes.
midpoint. And then if I would say do
that's
better
exactly
than
my
that,
point.
That would be the bar.
No, yeah. Tactic, I have two options that I'm trying to decide between, and you've seen me play extensively at both of these. So my first one is the piano game. I don't know if you guys are familiar with this. I know other arcades also have this, but it was an app game as well. Like, the notes drop down from the screen and you have to hit the corresponding button, and something about the game. So instead of it being on your phone, you're literally standing in front of this like oversized piano. You've got like six giant piano buttons or something like that. And it's sort of like Guitar Hero in a way. And it gets faster and faster, and you basically go until you miss a note. And that, for whatever reason, I like zen out and I can just
she's a sick
going.
Pianist.
The other one is the clown game, where you're throwing balls at the clowns.
Yeah, it's
hate that one.
What makes
I
you good
that
at that one is that you have help. Me.
Oh, yeah, but I'm also good at it without you.
But you don't ever have the high score unless... The reason why that... So that's part of our strategy in the system, is we team up on that game.
Okay, so piano game
I'm just
game
reading,
is
my by the way. I'm just reading... Dave & Buster's stock is up more than 50% over the past year. It's time to invest, because I do think that if they're doing this, they know what the plan is, and they might make a lot of money off of this. Steven, your arcade game of choice in Nurbauer's fantastical scenario.
I don't
any
know.
Any arcade game.
Are you Pinball Wizard?
No, I'm not.
Yeah, me neither. Pinball's hard.
I mean, maybe Skee-Ball, but even that, it's been 20 years since I've played that.
Yeah, Skee-Ball's a nightmare for me. Anyways, yeah, this is an interesting idea. I do predict it will take off. In particular, if Dave & Buster's is in a phase of growth right now, which it seems like they are, I think this could be very interesting. So, we'll see. Let us know what you think. @OWLegal86, @OWTactic, @OWNerdBomber, our main show account, @OnlineWarriors1. Do you think that the idea of betting in a Dave & Buster's has juice from a business perspective? And also, what arcade game would you, you know... stake some money on if you were the player?
I should have won it on Dave & Buster's during the pandemic. They were at like $7 a share.
It does seem like they're they've experienced a lot of growth in the past couple of years. Let's move on to What Are You Up To Wednesday. This is the part of the show where we talk about what we've been up to. As is tradition, I'm going to turn it over to Steven to start, as he has the longest gap amongst all of us.
Oh, boy. Got three games I'm going to talk about. So first one, we talked about the last time I was on the show. When we talked about the Nintendo Direct, there was a little indie game called Pepper Grinder. And I was excited because finally getting a release date. And we finally came out, and the game is, it's okay. It's not what I thought it was going to be. It's short. It's only four worlds, four levels, and a boss battle per world. And there's like kind of Donkey Kong Country style thing where there's three coins or so that you can find through other levels if you want to 100% the level. And so the game was like 5 hours, which I was kind of hoping for more. The boss battles were not fun. They kind of ruined the flow of the game. But
too challenging or just not?
It's just great flow. They're just not fun. Like, it's just, it's not the same as the levels. There's no kind of flow through the boss battles. They're just kind of stagnant and they're just different than the levels. So it just kind of wasn't fun. The individual levels were fun. But yeah, it's just, there's not enough. It was just too short. And I kind of wanted more. Maybe we'll get more. I don't know. The second game will make Illegal and Tectic happy. I just played this recently, and I played Metroid Prime.
Oh.
Hunters.
Oh. Hunters. Okay. So you lost me a little bit there. I'm aware of Metroid Prime Hunt.
Well, the Metroid Prime Hunters story arc is interesting because it kind of gives a little bit of more breadth to what exactly Samus is, you know. But
I love Metroid games, mainly the 2D ones. This one, it's fine. Like, I played it back in the day when it first came out, but I never beat it. But the controls now are just, it's so hard to, because you're aiming with the stylus, your hands are cramping because you're shooting with your left trigger. It's just, the controls are really hard. They're crampy. The game is just four worlds that you go to. You play the same boss multiple times, but just different iterations was kind of annoying.
A fun fact about Hunters is there was a demo version that was included with the DS when it launched. Yeah. So I played the demo, and I remember thinking, this is hard. Just from a controls perspective, like you said, I think it's challenging.
Yeah, so it's not the best Metroid game, but it was all right. I had fun with it. It was just kind of my other game I was playing was, the next game I'll talk about was Chorus. But since I was on the PS5, I needed a game to play that while watching sports. So I just picked up Metroid Prime Hunters to play while I was on my, just something handheld to do while I was watching TV. And then, the third game was a game called Chorus. It's on the PlayStation. I don't know what else it's on. It's one of those free games if you have one of the PlayStation Plus memberships. I think it's the second tier. It comes with that. I was just randomly searching through it, see what games are on there, and it was like, ooh, a space game. I'll try this. So I played it, and it's a dogfighting space game. It's open world. You're always in your ship. You sometimes are out of your ship for cutscenes, but that's it. That's the only time you ever see your pilot. You're just flying around the system, doing missions. There's kind of an overarching story where there's certain missions you have to do, but you can just fly around and you'll be like, hey, can you come help us? And you go and you fly over there and you help them defend them from bad guys or go achieve some cargo for them. And I beat it today. That was kind of one of the things I wanted to do before coming on today, was beating it. So I beat it today. It's about 16 hours. It was just really fun. Like, the controls felt nice compared to most flying games I've played in the past. You get abilities where you can spear through things, where you just hit the R1 and you just dodge forward ahead and you can attack groups of people that way. You can hit a button and it puts you right behind the guy you're trying to shoot, so you get better angles to them. You can disable their weapons with another button that you kind of upgrade throughout the thing. You can upgrade your ship, get better weapons. You've got three main ones. You got a Gatling gun, a missile, and then I forget what they call it, but it's something that just kind of disables shields. And you just kind of use your variety of things to take down this overarching story where you're a girl who was part of the bad guys. She blew up a whole planet, and she's just kind of dealing with the repercussions of emotionally and how she feels about destroying that planet. So she decides she wants to take down the bad guys who she worked for. And you're just trying to...
Yeah, I...
A group of enemies.
Hashtag Ender's Game.
Yeah.
I'm interested in this because I like the idea of ship combat games a lot. And I have been looking for a long time for one that I would actually enjoy because I've tried with a few in the past. It dates all the way back to me playing like the Rogue Squadron games.
Yeah, like, that's what it felt like.
I just used to love those, and I haven't found a game that has scratched that itch since. So this seems like it may be one that's worth trying for me.
One of the fun things is like there's giant ships and you can fly through them. Like you have to take out their engines on the inside. There's not enough of that in the game, but there's just brief moments of that. Where you have to, you shoot parts on the outside where you disable the shields. It gets you to go inside where you can disable more stuff. So kind of flying around these giant ships and then having to fly out of it before it blows up was kind of fun. Overall, it was a surprise. I had never heard of it before. And so I never heard anybody talk about it when it came out. And so it ended up being a pleasant surprise for me.
Yeah, and $24 on Amazon for the PS5 copy. It feels like a definite try for me. So, good tip.
If you have the tier, I don't know what PlayStation Plus you have. It's free.
I don't have any of the PlayStation Plus. I'm full offline right now.
But yeah, but a fun time.
Very cool. Anything else you want to update us on?
I can briefly say saw the free guy. It was fun, or the fall guy. Sorry, it was fun. I think maybe people should go see it just to help it the box office because it's kind of not doing as great as it's supposed to. Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt have great chemistry. I don't know how they couldn't have great chemistry because they're just awesome people, it seems. But it was a good time at the theater.
Very good. I'm going to go next because I missed last week, obviously. I don't have much to update on. I do want to shout out specifically. So I think last time I was on this show, I was talking about a few different games on the Switch I was thinking about buying. And I was trying to decide between them. And I wound up picking none of them. And finding what I think is another indie gem on this Nintendo Switch. It cost me $3. It's a game called Railbound.
I feel like you do this to hurt me, though.
I do.
Gave you so many good suggestions, and you're just like, no.
Well, the thing is, and this is contributing to the problem because I'm always like, even like $15 on the Switch feels like a king's ransom when I can find a game like Railbound or Dicey Dungeons, which I've mentioned in the past, that like cost $3 and I get so much mileage out of them. And they tend to be games that have simple premises, simple concepts, but they're just very well executed. And Railbound is no exception to that. You're basically assembling train tracks to get trains to certain places. It's a puzzle game. Very cutesy. There's the two dogs driving the train, and they're like puppies. I don't know if that gets you going. Fun little cute art style, fun music, $3. So I've really been enjoying that. I'm trying to think. Otherwise, I don't have a whole lot to update on in terms of like I finished Duma Key, which is the last book I mentioned on the show reading, but I'm in between books right now, so I'm trolling for my next book, so I'll update on that. But really just wanted to shout out Railbound as being great, and then just kind of outside doing a lot of yard work, which isn't really worth talking about on the show. So we'll swing it over to Nerd Bomber to keep us going.
All right, so we watched the BlackBerry movie last night. BlackBerry, obviously, you guys know what the phone is, right? But as we've been seeing a lot of like corporate/product/brand origin stories roll out, BlackBerry is one that I feel like kind of went under the radar until it hit Hulu. Like, I don't remember seeing this hit movie theaters or anything like that.
We talked about it on the show.
Did we?
Yeah. We talked about the trailer.
Yeah, it was a news.
99% sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought we like mentioned it in terms of like one of the other various brand origin stories that came out recently. But regardless, we finally did watch this. It was fairly good. I mean, as much as you can like lionize any sort of, you know, brand origin story, I felt like this was one of the better ones, if just because I'm a little bit more of a tech geek. So I really appreciated, you know, the product and development cycle part of this story. Like, it didn't necessarily just focus on the business management part. Like, it actually went and showed the engineering department and the hurdles that they faced. And so from that perspective, I actually thought that was pretty interesting. It gave me a little bit more like Halt and Catch Fire vibes. I don't know if any of you guys have watched that show. I know Tectic has with me, but if you haven't seen it,
I have not.
It's got Lee Pace, a bunch of other people, honestly. I would definitely highly recommend that show if you are into any sort of, you know, tech origin story, because that's at least very fictional, more about like a search engine. But this kind of gave me that vibe. And I don't know, I thought it was pretty decent.
Tell me about Glenn Howerton, because I'm very interested in the fact that he's even in that movie. How was he in it?
The hair was a little distracting. I won't lie to you there. I was trying to figure out for parts of this movie. So he's playing a bald character, and I know in real life he's not bald, and how they implemented the baldness was just not the best. I couldn't tell.
All of the characters, like, the hair was
well, Jay Baruchel also has like white hair in that movie, at least for part of it, from what I remember from the trailer. So they're doing a lot of hair stuff.
And specifically Glenn Howerton, I couldn't tell if they had like put a bald cap on him or if they had shaved his actual hair, because at some point, like, you could see that, you know how like when you shave your hair and then it starts to grow back? I don't want to call it a 5 o'clock shadow on the top of your head, but like it kind of looked like a head 5 o'clock shadow at times. Apart from that, though, I think he actually fit the bill of his character pretty well. You know, he was kind of like a dry, harsh marketing guy, essentially, who became a CEO and did some shiesty, shady things. And not saying that he is, you know, shiesty, shady, but just from, you know, watching
Always Sunny.
I don't
think he was the villain.
Think he was the villain. I think he did some stupid things, but I don't think the company would have necessarily taken off without him. That said, I do think Glenn Howerton played a very good CEO in this role. Like, I bought it. I actually forgot that he was, you know, from Always Sunny for a hot minute, which I feel like is impressive.
Yeah, at this point, any of the guys from Sunny, like, they have to work pretty hard, I would think, to distance themselves from that, provided that's what they're trying to do. So, interesting. Good to know.
Aside from that, you know, just played a little bit more Halo Infinite. I'm getting back into that multiplayer scene for whatever reason, probably just because I like to punish myself. I'm not very good. I did win a round. I was playing free-for-all for a while, and I actually, you know, I was holding my own, but I was not winning. I was always in like the upper half of every game when I finished, but I was never winning. And then I won, and I was like, this is great, you know, I'm turning a corner here in my skill set. And then they went ahead and got rid of like standard free-for-all with the next update they rolled out. So I'm trying to find my footing. I don't know what game mode I really want to play right now. So yeah, I've been playing like Fiesta, which they give you a different gun. It's sort of like Gun Game, but not really. Every time you spawn in, you get a different weapon. And a hot take. So most of my Halo experience comes from Halo 3, and I haven't played, you know, anything after Halo 3 really. And jumping into Halo Infinite was solely because it was free multiplayer. And I just don't understand what some of the weapons do. I don't understand the range on the hammer. It feels like you can get hit with a hammer like across the map and it'll kill you, and that I just remember in like Halo 3 you couldn't kill people with the hammer unless you're like right on top of them. It's a little jarring. I prefer the standard loadout, and I don't know how I feel about it, but it does feel more like codified Halo Infinite in general. So that's kind of been what I've been up to, just that and hanging out, enjoying the nice weather, getting outside, getting some steps in.
Cool tactic. That brings us to you to close us out.
All right, so I got two updates. I'll keep it short. The first one is we watched a rom-com called Set It Up. It's about two overworked assistants.
I love this movie.
That want freedom, so they try to set their bosses up with each other so that they have more of a private life and they're not married to their work. Just a fun rom-com. I do recommend it. It was enjoyable. And then the other thing that I want to mention is I like gardening, and every year I try to like improve upon the lessons learned from the previous year. So I've tried doing like a seed starting box in my garage, and then I'll transplant my crops. But then the controlled, you know, solar light to the actual sun always is like a harsh transition, and you have to be very careful about that. And it caused a lot of difficulties. So I completely decimated what I had. I built a whole new larger garden box it was half inch cedar before. Now I went to 2 inch thick larch, 13 feet long, so that there's no chance of any critters getting under it, over it, through it, whatever. And then I'm going to now use, the reason why I want the thick part is because there's like a company that makes greenhouse pop-up tent things that can kind of go along your garden on the ground, but I'm going to fix this to the plywood itself so that it's sort of this impenetrable greenhouse that I can also just remove the top when the cool air is now consistently warm and I don't worry about a chill overnight. And so that's where I'm going, and I'm very excited for it.
Yeah, going back to Set It Up, just real quick, as I said, I love that. Early Glenn Howerton, or not Glenn Howerton, Glenn Powell. It's like, I think it's like his first movie, or like it feels like his first movie, which is very interesting because I also watched it semi-recently. But very, very good on the gardening, and yeah, set it up. It's on. I think it's on Netflix, right? $3.99 Yep. Watch that movie. It's a nice little romp.
Also, shout out to my lower back because I realized
shout out Tactics lower back.
I realized I'm getting older, and boy, when I was done with this, was my lower back in pain.
Yeah, that was me last weekend. Last weekend, I did a bunch of mulching outside, and my back was backing.
You know how heavy a 2x12x13 feet piece of lumber is?
2x12x13 That's huge.
Yeah, picture me carrying that around, and there was multiple of them to build this thing.
And Nerd Bomber not helping, just sitting up on the deck, like sipping a Mai Tai.
Oh yeah,
I know he's reading.
Just being like a little to the left. That's good. Well, that brings us to Quiz Town, and I'm the mayor of Quiz Town this week, and I'm going to be giving a quiz on Anne Hathaway. I don't know. I was going to say something else about Anne Hathaway, but I don't want to give away any quiz.
She Hathaway.
So going through the quiz records, we have Nerd Bomber at 7-3. I'm at 7-4. Tectic 4-8. Steven 0-1. Steven looking to get in the win column this week. As you all know, this is Price is Right style. It's all numerical answers. Everyone gets one plus one or an answer of one per game. Considering she is so far ahead in the records, Nerd Bomber will certainly go first, followed by Tectic, followed by Steven. And I have 5 questions in front of me and a tiebreaker as needed. First question. I recently watched the version of Les Miserables that she is in, and she sings the very popular and very famous song, I Dreamed a Dream. What is the runtime of that song in minutes and seconds?
This is going to show you that I'm not really a big Broadway person, because I feel like this is a classic that you should know. I'm going to say... You said minutes and seconds?
I did.
3 minutes and 52 seconds.
Over to Tactic.
I'm going to go 1 minute.
And over to Steven.
Oh, boy. First thing popped in my head, 2:37.
And Nerd Bomber is on the board. It was 4 minutes and 37 seconds. Broadway songs, I think, tend to be pretty long-winded. And I Dream a Dream, no exception. There's like a big instrumental interlude in the middle of it. So it's a pretty good movie, from what I remember. And yeah. This next question is much more standard. How old is Anne Hathaway in years? And Tactic will go first this time.
She is 47.
Over to Steven.
38.
And Nerd Bomber.
42.
Oof. You just missed it. That's a point for Steven. 41 years old. Birthday November 12th, 1982. So 41 going on 42. And Steven is on the board.
I also, let me be clear, she doesn't look 47 at all. I was just trying to like go for the strategy.
Well, you got to start going for the points on the board, because that's where we are right now. How many screen credits does Anne Hathaway have as an actress on IMDb? And Steven will go first for this question.
I'm going to say 25.
Over to Nerd Bomber.
It's definitely going to be more than that. I mean, she was Princess of Genovia 3 times, and that's just that series alone. I'm going to say 40.
And T-Dog.
It's definitely more than that, because she was Princess of Genovia 3 times.
Princess of Genovia.
So I'm going to say 41.
Oh, screw you.
So that's a plus one, and a plus one well used. She has 56 actress credits on IMDb, and I'm glad you brought up Genovia, because it brings us into our next question, and all of you are tied. And we're back to Nerd Bomber going first here. Her cinematic debut was in The Princess Diaries. What is the Rotten Tomatoes critics score of The Princess Diaries? You know, I love a Rotten Tomatoes question. I just can't resist.
Like, I feel like they hated it because they're a bunch of haters. I'm going to go with an average 65%.
No, it did better than that. This had a 76.
And Steven.
Oh, boy. I'm going to go 35.
Okay, I was worried you all were going to bust. Steven moves up again. You did say average, Nerd Bomber, and you were almost exactly right. 49%. 49%.
Haters. Haters.
If you say so. This brings us to question 5. Tectic will go first. This is my last non-tiebreaker question. So, Steven, if you get this, you've cemented the victory. If you all bust, the victory will also be cemented. Anne Hathaway has a Primetime Emmy Award for Best Voiceover for her work on The Simpsons. In what year did she win this Emmy? In what year was she in The Simpsons?
2008.
Oh, boy. Nerd Bomber still has a plus one, doesn't she?
You betcha.
2011.
2012.
Boy, I thought we were going to get the cascading plus ones, which would have been fascinating. It was 2010. So Tectic gets the point.
Darn.
You guys both narrowly busted. I believe Steven still did have his plus one. So if he would have said 2009 and Nerd Bomber, you would have said 2010, you would have gotten the point. But Nerd Bomber is now out of the running.
That's what I was afraid of. I knew she was going to use it if I used it.
It's down to Steven and Tectic. Tectic, here's what we're going to do. Steven, before you give your answer, I'm going to have Tectic text me his answer. So you guys are giving simultaneous answers. There's no gamesmanship to be had. So I'm going to read the question, and then Steven, do not answer vocally until I have Tectic's answer. How much money, per Wikipedia, have Anne Hathaway's films grossed worldwide?
So this is all of her films together gross?
Worldwide.
The sum?
That's correct. Tactics processing, Steven. A moment. As his brain cooks. Nerd Bomber, is there smoke coming out of his ears?
There actually is. I might have to run and go get a fire extinguisher.
Fire hazard. Real quick.
This is good for airtime.
Okay. Steven, I have Tactics' answer, so you can go ahead, give your answer whenever you're ready.
2.5 billion.
Okay. The victory goes to Steven. Steven's on the board. Tactic submitted 1.7 billion. The actual answer was 6.8 billion. And actually, according to Wikipedia, it's over 6.8 billion. So, Steven, congratulations. You're on the board. You move to 1-1. Nerd Bomber to 7-4. So, her and I are now tied. And Tactic to 4-9. Yeah, Tactic, it's not great for you at this point. But I believe in you. There's a lot of year left.
And every loss lately, I feel like I've been fighting to the end.
Yeah, that was another brutal one for you. You're not wrong. That brings us to the end of the show. Steven, thank you so much again for joining us. We always appreciate having you on. Hopefully you had a good time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
The pleasure is always ours. Also, Anne Hathaway's middle name is Jacqueline. Just throwing that in there. Okay, so you can't really ask that as a question because it's not numerical. So yeah, you can head over to Apple Podcasts, leave us a review there if you liked what you heard, or if you didn't. You can hit us up on Patreon, patreon.com/onlinewarriorspodcast. Or in the handles on Twitter mentioned previously in the episode. Again, thank you all for listening. We'll see you next week. Hope you're enjoying the month of May. And in the meantime, stay safe and keep on podcasting.